We're with Will Warren, the co-founder and CEO at Matcha, the aggregator over ZeroX. Will, it's great to have you on the Define podcast. Welcome.
Thank you, Camila. Happy to be here.
Yeah. So you were on the podcast a while ago, I think. I think you were probably like one of the first episodes I did. So it's great to have you back. You're definitely one of the OG founders in the space. Can't wait to dive into all of the latest with ZeroX and Matcha. Maybe let's just start from the beginning. Would love to first get a bit of your own story, what led you to found ZeroX, what ZeroX is, and then what Matcha is.
Great. Yeah, sounds good. So I originally became interested in crypto, I think a way a lot of early Bitcoiners did. I kind of read the Bitcoin white paper on Hacker News, and it was like a really compelling piece of technology to allow kind of permissionless global payments, and just kind of kept track of Bitcoin. Thought it was interesting technology. There weren't very many legitimate use cases yet. So my wife, Linda Shea, who was my girlfriend back at the time, when we were in college, she ended up joining Coinbase early on. And I think it was 2014. And through Linda being at Coinbase and getting a lot more exposure to the cryptocurrency community and the different technologies that were emerging, I just got a lot more familiar with the space. I was not planning to get into crypto or to be an entrepreneur or to do a startup. I was originally planning to do like academic research. I was getting a PhD at UC San Diego. And when Ethereum came out and I learned about Ethereum, it felt like the most important, invention since the internet, and that, I could spend my time, doing engineering and research, or I could, participate in, potentially one of the, greatest revolutions of my lifetime. And so I dropped out of grad school and I moved to San Francisco with Linda. She was nice enough to, not make me pay rent. Spent time in San Francisco and ultimately came at least clear to my co-founder Amir and I, we met in San Francisco, that, we developed strong conviction that all forms of value would be tokenized on public blockchains like Ethereum. So traditional assets like stocks, bonds, startup equity, fiat currencies, all the way to, more abstract forms of value, things that like, types of assets that don't, didn't really exist or couldn't exist before tokens. And this, ultimately led Amir and I to develop ZeroX protocol, which is a protocol for exchanging ERC-20 tokens in a peer-to-peer way. That's, kind of how I got interested in crypto and entered the space and met Amir, my co-founder, and got started in 2016.
Awesome. And I love this just like bigger vision of how in the future all assets will be tokenized. I definitely agree with that. It's such an obvious path forward. Like assets should be digital. They should be traded on blockchains. It's just that the most efficient way of trading and transferring value. I love this bigger vision for ZeroX. And then from there, how did building this protocol lead to building Matcha?
Yeah, great question. So I think kind of a consistent trend that has kind of played out over time since we started building ZeroX in 2016 is that it became clear that you know, to really solve developers' needs and the needs of end users, we need to get closer to them. We need to build the products that they are directly interacting with and that are allowing them to access Ethereum smart contracts. And, you know, now there's so many other networks as well. And simply building like the infrastructure layer on its own without, you know, actually understanding the needs of developers and, you know, their desire to have kind of like a self-hosted API that kind of looks and feels like a Web2 API. And then ultimately, you know, how do you integrate this to create like a compelling user experience that's, you know, pleasant and delightful? Like, these are all things that, you know, over time, we kind of worked our way up the stack from building just at the smart contract layer to, you know, these kind of world-class professional grade, you know, APIs that are hosted, and also ultimately like Matcha, which is kind of the consumer product that uses these APIs that we've been developing.
Were you maybe expecting at first, when you were first building 0x, that other teams would handle the consumer-facing side of things, but then you decided to take on that challenge yourself?
Yeah, so when we initially started developing 0x protocol, our focus was 100% on just open source infrastructure for developers. And the extent to which we would, you know, make this technology accessible to developers was, you know, JavaScript libraries, but, you know, nothing hosted, everything is open source. And, you know, a lot of developers did create decentralized exchanges. Some of them were venture funded. Paradox was acquired by Coinbase back in 2018. So they were a 0x relayer. And, you know, ultimately, it became clear that there are going to be more and more different user interfaces where people are looking to access tokens. And it may be because they're looking to trade. Kind of traditional use case for swapping is, you know, speculation or a centralized exchange. But people are also looking to buy and sell tokens for utility. Maybe, you know, if they want to gain access to a service, they need to be able to easily buy and sell tokens in a frictionless way. So it became clear to us that, you know, users were going to be interacting with tokens through many different consumer applications. And the developers that are building these consumer applications, you know, they want more than a JavaScript library. They want something that kind of allows them to tap into, you know, the hundreds of different decentralized exchanges that exist. There's constantly new exchanges emerging, and make it really simple for their users to access tokens, buy or sell them in the most frictionless way possible. And so, you know, I think we still believe that there are going to be so many different consumer applications that users are using to swap tokens or access tokens. And, you know, I think that is something that we have pretty consistently viewed as kind of the future for Ethereum.
Mm-hmm. And so what is the differentiator that you want to, you know, bring to the table with Matcha among like all these different consumer facing applications and ways to trade?
Yeah. So we think there are going to be billions of tokenized assets. And, you know, in order for a mainstream audience to easily kind of find tokens and ensure that they're able to get a good price, there needs to be a, you know, we believe that there needs to be a product that is more like a search engine for tokens and liquidity. And that's where Matcha comes in. So, you know, we launched Matcha in 2020. And what really makes Matcha different from others is, you know, first of all, prices and trade execution are at the very core of swapping. And so Matcha aggregates, you know, over 100 different decentralized exchanges across 9 chains. You know, the thing that, you know, also is critically important in the Web3 space is the user experience. And since the very beginning, you know, Matcha, at the core of Matcha was this desire to create like a world-class user experience, something that's simple, clean, free of kind of the clunkiness, confusing UIs that I think a lot of us had kind of gotten accustomed to. Another, you know, couple of things about Matcha that, you know, set it apart. world-class MEV protection and smart order routing to make sure that, you know, you're getting a token at the best price available, and you know, you're not kind of reliant on any particular one UI. You can just get the best price regardless if you're using Matcha. And yeah, you know, since we launched Matcha, there's been over 500,000 unique wallets trading on Matcha, and it's moved over $62 billion of volume. And so, yeah, you know, Matcha is what we view as kind of like a complementary tool for accessing tokens and liquidity. But we don't think it's the only user interface or consumer application that will end up being used in the long term.
And so, okay, so you mentioned these like billions of assets that will be traded. And these assets are obviously, you know, they're going to be on different blockchains as well, right? So, you know, there are, I don't know, dozens of chains by now, especially if you count layer twos. So how does a DEX, an aggregator, navigate through this landscape? Like, how can you make it easier for users to trade a token regardless of where it lives?
Great question. And yeah, as you mentioned, over the last few years, we kind of went from a world where everything that people were excited about lived on the Ethereum mainnet, and all of the user activity was on Ethereum mainnet. And over time, you know, we started to run into the throughput limitations of the Ethereum blockchain, and it started to become really expensive to use. And this has, you know, more recently, this, I think, kind of the congestion and the demand for use has really pushed users to expand to other Ethereum virtual machine, you know, blockchains, layer two networks like Arbitrum, Optimism, as well as like other EVM layer ones. And, you know, this is a necessary, you know, kind of necessary for our space to scale and support, you know, tens of millions of users versus, you know, maybe the a few million people that are using DeFi today. And one of the problems with going multi-chain, so the benefits of multi-chain, more users can enter the space using some of these DeFi applications, becomes more affordable, less costly to use some of these networks. The downside is that now you have all of these different markets that are fragmented on different networks, and the price that you may, you know, be able to purchase or sell a token at really varies depending upon, you know, which network you're located on, that your wallet is located on, and you know, that's not good. We're already kind of fighting an uphill battle trying to get people to use DeFi, and kind of liquidity fragmentation and the user experience friction of trying to kind of interact with a multi-chain world just makes it harder. So, you know, that's why we're really excited to be launching cross-chain swaps with Matcha. So, yeah, you know, we want Matcha to play a central role in onboarding users to the DeFi world and making tokens really accessible and good pricing, easy to come by. And so, yeah, Matcha, you know, super exciting. Matcha is now supporting cross-chain swaps. You can trade from any token on one blockchain to a different token on another blockchain. And, you know, the entire experience is very seamless, efficient, and intuitive, we hope. you know, we believe it's intuitive. And so, yeah, that's, you know, a really big change for us. By the time you hear this, if you're watching this right now, yeah, cross-chain swaps are live on Matcha.
Woohoo! okay, so, you know, I think this is, like I said, a great development because this is one of the major pain points when dealing with crypto and I mean, with dealing with DeFi, this really painful hurdle of bridging or, you know, having multiple wallets to trade assets. So it's great to be able to do it all in one place. But you mentioned this challenge of having fees be similar or the same across chains. So how did you deal with that?
Like gas fees, like network fees?
Yeah, swapping tokens on Ethereum is going to be more expensive than doing that on Arbitrum. So how do you maintain kind of the same experience for users regardless of the chain that they're swapping on?
Gotcha. Yeah. So good question. So Matcha cross-chain swaps are aggregating different bridges. And so we're using Socket API. So shout out to Socket. And this allows us to route users' transactions through kind of the top bridges that a lot of folks are probably familiar with, like the default kind of bridges for entering or exiting a layer two network. Matcha will also route transactions through Circle's cross-chain transfer protocol. So you can say swap any token into USDC on blockchain A, and then we can use Circle's cross-chain transfer protocol to, have the user receive native USDC on blockchain B. And so these are just like a few of the routes that we support. We also support, other, kind of industry-leading bridging solutions like Across and Layer Zero and many others. So, users can come to Matcha, and regardless of what they're trying to trade from and into and the networks that they exist on, Matcha will find the best way to get you from A to B and the most efficient way, give you the best value for the money, and hopefully, make it a lot more intuitive and easy to do.
Oh, okay, I see. So can I think of Matcha's cross-chain swaps as like a bridge aggregator?
Yeah, exactly. And so one of the things that we found is that, users don't necessarily just want to bridge, a token from network A to network B. Oftentimes, in order to pursue an opportunity, like a new innovative application on a network, in order to access that application, sometimes users need to convert an asset that they have on one network into, an asset needed to interact with a new application. And so Matcha is going to not only allow you to get the best swap rates from aggregating liquidity, which is, that's what we do, but also be able to do that in a cross-chain way by aggregating all the different canonical and third-party bridges that exist in order to do it in the safest and most efficient way.
Is there a limit to the pairs that you'll support?
Yes, there are some technical limitations, some corner cases where a certain kind of pair, so kind of source and destination asset, where mm-hmm. a route between those source and destination assets isn't possible to find. But one of the great things about cross-chain swaps, since we're combining a swap and a bridge, we're able to, more flexibly find the best possible route that will get you from your source to destination asset. Whereas if you're trying to, just bridge, there's a smaller universe of routes that can get you from A to B.
Okay. I think when thinking and talking about bridges, maybe one of the first things that comes to mind is like all of the hacks that have happened since I think, some of the biggest hacks have been on bridges. So how do you deal with this security layer?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And it's something that has frankly prevented us from supporting bridges until now. We've kind of had a multi-chain thesis for a number of years now. Mm-hmm. And we've wanted to be able to support a kind of multi-chain, a frictionless multi-chain experience for a while. And one of the reasons why it's taken us until now to do it is because we weren't confident that the technology was mature enough to, you know, make more accessible to a mainstream audience. Now, a lot of those concerns are, have been addressed for us. We feel confident that layer two networks and the canonical bridges that people are relying on are battle tested and mature. We also see, bridging solutions like Circle's cross-chain transfer protocol, which is really interesting in that it is it's a fully centralized and fully custodial solution in between kind of the initiation of the bridging transaction and kind of resolving it. And so there's no kind of maybe questionable decentralized security guarantees to worry about. The entire kind of bridging transaction is backed by Circle, which is, again, one of the most trusted entities in the crypto space. And, we really admire what they've been doing recently with, making USDC a kind of more inherently native multi-chain token. There are also, other bridging solutions that, in our judgment, have reached the point of maturity where they're ready to be used. One of the great things about, the way that we have, architected things is that users will not be vulnerable to individual bridges being hacked. So you're never holding a kind of bridge token that, if kind of the underlying is drained or there's a hack, you wouldn't be able to redeem, your bridge token for the underlying. We encourage users to always, only hold native tokens in their wallet. I think the bridge space is still maturing, but we're quite comfortable with the set of bridges that, users are going to be able to access through Matcha.
So are you taking that that risk? Like, are you holding the bridge, you as in like Matcha, holding the bridge tokens for the user, like when they swap?
No. So actually, we're ensuring that every transaction is atomic. There's no, at no point in time is the user really giving up custody of their assets, except in the case of cross-chain transfer protocol, where their USDC is burned on one chain and then minted on another chain. The user is never in a position where they have assets that are deposited into a bridge contract or that are more or less dependent on a bridge remaining secure, unless they intentionally choose to purchase bridge tokens that may have those properties.
Nice. And what about, what made you more confident that bridges are ready? Was there like a specific like technological development or was it just like, okay, like they've been around long enough, like handling enough volume that you feel okay using them now?
I think part of it is that there has been more time for what was, a relatively untested technology that wasn't being used at scale to, over the years, now being a critical, bridges, whether they're native bridges or non-native bridges, they have become a critical tool in users' toolkit in order to navigate Web3 and to not be kind of constrained to one network. And this is a trend we think is going to continue. We think users are going to be interacting with multiple networks and have their assets, needing to be able to move their assets frictionlessly between them. And so at this point, we're confident that the technology is more mature. It has been used by large numbers of users at decent scale at this point. And users need them. users need the ability to kind of be chain agnostic. And so the time has come.
Nice. And speaking of that, is this solution exclusively for EVM chains? Like which chains are you supporting now?
Yeah. So we are launching with support for 7 different networks. So Ethereum, Optimism, Polygon, Arbitrum, Avalanche, Base, and BNB chain.
Do you think you'll be able to support non-EVM chains in the future?
Yeah, actually, definitely. So there are a number of pretty mature and battle-tested bridging solutions that support Solana as well. I know there are also solutions that, you know, allow users to access Bitcoin on the EVM chain. Right now, our priority is supporting the Ethereum ecosystem and the different EVM chains. We've been closely following other ecosystems like Solana for a long time, and we are excited about the traction that they're seeing.
Nice. I think this kind of narrative that you're highlighting by just making a huge bet on multi-chain trading is so interesting, because I remember, when these bridge hacks were happening, it seemed like every other week there were a lot of questions in this space about whether this theory about the future of there being, multiple blockchains and users being able to transact seamlessly among them, which was kind of consensus at one point, was like very much questioned when those hacks happened. There were a lot of like big voices in the space just arguing for a single chain or maybe maybe there would be like just like a couple of chains, but arguing that like the multi-chain dream was dead. So it's interesting to see that you're just like very much very bullish on this vision again.
Yeah, I think a really good blog post that I think gets at what you were mentioning. So I think Vitalik wrote a blog post called "Multi-Chain versus Cross-Chain," or "Why the Future is Multi-Chain, mm-hmm. not Cross-Chain," and it was a really interesting argument. And yeah, I think kind of the gist of it. And let me know if my understanding's not accurate. My understanding was that Vitalik felt that there would be many layer 2 networks that are all kind of plugged into the same consensus layer, and that this is kind of the most secure model for multi-chain to have kind of a shared security layer, and that kind of sovereign networks that have their own consensus and aren't rooted in Ethereum pose really significant risks. There are systemic risks created by these could be like called bridges. And therefore, he was more optimistic, pun intended, about kind of, roll-ups and the sort. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if... It seems like people in this space sometimes have a short memory, and seeing, bridges getting hacked and blow up, I don't think it has reduced the demand to be able to access different networks. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how things play out, how Ethereum scales, whether it's kind of roll-ups and kind of a layer 2 centric approach, or if, sovereign networks with their own consensus will, continue to have no issues onboarding users.
Yeah, no, it is super interesting. Yeah, and I think you're right. I remember that blog post. He was arguing for, this future where it seemed like blockchains will be their own universe or their own like separate silos with their layer twos, but there wouldn't be much communication between those ecosystems because he was saying bridges aren't very safe. But, you know, in theory, maybe, but you're right, like in practice, people do want to, you know, transact in many different chains. I think, you know, hopefully these bridges are mature enough to allow that, because I think that's the user experience, you know, most people are looking for.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I think folks want a seamless multi-chain experience where everything just is very simple. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want something on a different network than you're currently located on, you simply, you know, swap from A to B, and it works and it's safe, and you don't have to worry about which bridge you're using or if you're getting a good price. And that's what I think that we've, or at least, you know, we've made really good progress towards achieving that with Matcha, and it's going to continue to improve with a more seamless kind of cross-chain experience.
Nice. And then for the type of user that you're targeting with this, it seems like this, I mean, all of this might go way over most people's heads, even if you're, you know, simplifying the user experience. I don't know. It seems like for now we're dealing in a bit of a, just like a bubble or like an echo chamber of degens or like more crypto natives at this point in DeFi. Do you view this solution as being for them, and then maybe, I don't know, like in the future, more mainstream users will be able to access it, or how can you get more mainstream users to be comfortable enough to be transacting on many different blockchains?
Yeah, good question. So, you know, regardless of kind of your use case, whether you're like a whale that's, you know, yield farming or trying to find like the latest opportunity on a layer two network, or you're, you know, moving small amounts and just, you know, testing and getting comfortable with using a new network, you know, regardless of kind of your level of sophistication, our objective with Matcha is to make it as easy as possible to get any token on any network as seamlessly as possible. And so, you know, in terms of how users will, you know, manage their wallets and, you know, the complexity of having assets on different chains, I do think that is something that's going to get complex. And, you know, our first objective is to make it really easy to get the token you want, regardless of where it's located. And then, you know, in terms of portfolio management, you know, there are likely, you know, going to be opportunities to make multi-chain more accessible, but there are already really great tools like Zapper and Zerion that, you know, make multi-chain a little bit more accessible today.
Mm-hmm. But I'm wondering about the bigger question of whether, I don't know, like whether the non-crypto user, like the just like mainstream user who maybe has like Bitcoin in Coinbase and that's it, whether those users will be compelled to use DeFi and, you know, use non-custodial solutions, because I don't know. I think it's been hard to see them make that jump. I think, you know, with NFTs, we kind of saw that happen. But so far, I don't think DeFi has made that, you know, I don't think DeFi has been attractive enough for the mainstream user to make that jump, I think. And that's why, you know, it's why we're seeing it still be so small as compared to the rest of crypto. I don't know. What do you think needs to happen for DeFi to be more mainstream? Because I think just like on the proposition of like owning your keys, that's not enough. Like I think that just like the regular, you know, person on the street, it doesn't really care about, you know, being, you know, self-custodying their assets unless they really have to, unless they're like in Venezuela or Argentina, somewhere where they're like being censored. But most people in the developed world, at least, they're not going to care. I think they will care about use cases they can't get in Web2 or TradFi or even CeFi. So it's like, I don't, to me, it's like DeFi is really competing against CeFi for people's attention. So I'm curious to hear your thoughts on like, what can DeFi do to compete in terms of like DEXs versus SEXs and just like in general for like other applications?
Great question. So I have a couple of thoughts on this. So first, you know, I think for people in developed countries, like, you know, I grew up in the United States. I've been here my entire life. We've been fortunate to have like a mature financial system that functions and allows us to live a stable existence. But, you know, sadly, that isn't the case for most of the population of the globe. And as you mentioned, you know, Argentina, they're experiencing like 10% inflation every month. So, you know, Linda and I were nomadic and we spent a month in Argentina. And people aren't even willing to list rentals for an apartment in the local currency. Everything, you know, if you want to buy or sell real estate, if you want to like rent something, it's all listed in US dollars because they would literally have to update the price every few hours to reflect the inflation that's going on in their country. And so I do think, you know, crypto plays a really important role in serving as an equalizing force for the world. The folks that have been fortunate enough to, you know, live in like the more developed or mature financial systems, we're probably going to be, you know, looking for new use cases, speculation, kind of toy use cases that maybe aren't having kind of this noble equalizing force impact on the world. But the folks that aren't necessarily in the USA actually are. In Argentina, like there's really significant amounts of real world adoption of stablecoins, and in particular, you know, Tether USDT on top of the, you know, I just saw like a recent report that you know, USDT on top of the Tether network is you know, where a lot of economic activity is occurring for folks, not for speculation, but because it is a genuine tool that provides utility versus, you know, kind of the local economic situation that people find themselves in. So I think there is real world adoption happening. And part of the reason why it's happening is because we're scaling. So blockchains are highly redundant, distributed networks, extremely inefficient. They don't scale. And so this kind of recent transition to multi-chain, finding ways to scale these networks is critical for decreasing the costs. You know, the economies of scale that are needed to support a global population, like we're only just starting to crack that problem. It's a really technically challenging problem to build a scalable decentralized network. And, you know, I think right now, supporting cross-chain swaps in Matcha, making multi-chain more accessible. I think that is the way that we allow this technology to start moving past some of the kind of the toy phase and moving into the more impactful real-world use cases. But both of these use cases, you know, kind of the toy use cases and the real-world ones, they're both going to be important for adoption in the near term.
Yeah, I agree. And now that, you know, we were chatting before about how activity is picking up. We may be entering into a new, more bullish market. I don't want to jinx it, but who knows? Maybe we are, maybe we aren't. you know, if we are and we see a new wave of users coming to crypto prices increase, what do you think the next bull market for crypto looks like? Like, what are the use cases you think will get more adoption, or even what would you like to see?
So one thing that has been pretty consistent across past bull markets, and that I think will probably continue in future bull markets, is that a lot of the innovation that happens results in new tokens. And these tokens, you know, have different types of utility or serve different purposes. But in each kind of one of the new kind of new bursts of innovation or bull runs, this has been the case. So for like ICOs, tokens that are used for capital formation on a permissionless and on a global scale, it's something that is, it's an unlock. It's new. NFTs, these are tokens for social status, for representing membership in a community. It's not a brand new use case, but it is a new twist on existing use cases. And with DeFi Summer in yield farming, the idea of coming up with like innovative new ways of incentivizing adoption resulted in new tokens as well. And so, you know, I think this trend is going to continue to play out, where tokens really are the use case for blockchains. Blockchains are a way of representing ownership and managing ownership in a decentralized way, and tokens are the way that that manifests. And so, you know, again, our core thesis is there's going to be billions of tokenized assets across many different blockchains, and kind of comes back to why we think it's really critical that users have a all-in-one tool set that makes tokens and liquidity as accessible and frictionless to access as possible. And again, that goes back to why we're launching cross-chain swaps on Matcha, and you know why we believe it's ultimately important to support these these pieces of infrastructure for users.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's like no matter the use case, we can be sure that it's going to bring some new type of token with it. So it'll be exciting to see which one it is this time. We got a couple of questions from our Discord. So, you know, for people listening, we have a Discord community and we share interview guests ahead of time there and take questions from our community. So be sure to join our Discord. One question we got is that Matcha has been a mainstay in DeFi for some time. What are the biggest learnings from a risk perspective and security to the protocol itself and for the end user?
Yeah. So I don't think there are really secrets here when it comes to managing risk and security. There are no shortcuts. Going through and being extremely conscientious about how you build things and vet them before launching them to people, it's like a massive responsibility and one that we don't take lightly. And I think, you know, that culture that we have had and maintained since 2016 has allowed us to build a track record and earn the trust of, some of the folks that have heard about us over the years. And I think, you know, reputations are really hard to build and easy to ruin. And so for us, you know, user trust and the trust of our developers is the number one priority. And I think that's reflected in how we build. And, my hope is that that's how that hard work is recognized and perceived by other folks in the industry.
Awesome. And then the community was also wondering, how does Matcha make money?
Yeah, great question. So it's been interesting in the DEX space. It feels like monetization has kind of finally shifted from a taboo topic in decentralized, the world of decentralized communities, monetizing, creating like a sustainable business model. It's not an optional thing to have or a nice to have. It is necessary to have in order for us to builds enduring value and to continue to be building for users. And so, you know, one of the things that we believe philosophically is that we shouldn't charge fees if we're, you know, if users are just accessing kind of publicly public liquidity that is out there on the blockchain and they can go access that liquidity through any user interface. We don't really see, you know, ourselves as you know, needing to charge fees for that. This liquidity is a public good. Users should be able to access that for free. And where we charge fees is where we, you know, are adding value to users. And so for Matcha, we have two different trading modes. We have kind of standard mode, which is users kind of sign and broadcast their own transactions, zero fees, access all the liquidity that exists out there in the world. You can, you know, configure your custom RPC to protect against MEV and stuff like that. And then we have a second mode called Matcha Auto. And in this mode, Matcha submits the transaction on the user's behalf to ensure that the user is getting best trade execution. And so the user is protected against MEV, sandwich attacks. And, you know, for this mode, we charge a 15 basis point fee. And we think this makes a lot of sense for users that maybe aren't sophisticated enough to configure their own private RPC endpoint and handle, you know, the MEV protection and stuff on their own. And one of the other benefits of Matcha Auto when it comes to reliable trade execution is that Matcha Auto reduces the rate of failed trades by 85%, which is massive, especially during volatile times when networks are congested and the markets are moving. So, you know, in this, you know, kind of philosophy of, you know, if users are accessing a public good, we don't charge for it. If there's a way that we can provide additional value to users and they opt into it, then, you know, we'll charge a fee.
Uniswap made headlines recently by turning on their fees on their front end, similar to what you were saying. So using the protocol itself, obviously, I mean, there's no fee for that yet, but for the interfaces. But how is that different from what you're doing? I think Uniswap is charging a fee for any swap. And I think what you're saying is you make a bit of a distinction there of like for which transactions you are charging, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So for standard swap, zero fees. It's still aggregating all the liquidity that exists, both public liquidity and proprietary RFQ liquidity. All of that is kind of combined together and users pay zero fees to Matcha. And then for Matcha Auto, we provide all of that, but we also ensure there's really high quality trade execution and you know, a more reliable experience for folks that are maybe like a little bit less advanced, but want all the benefits of advanced tools. And for that, we'll charge a 15 basis point fee.
I think this kind of business model discussion is so fascinating. Because there's been like this question of like, how do you monetize building open source systems? And it looks like this is becoming a feasible way of doing that, right? It's like, okay, you develop the open source protocol and that's free. But then the interface, like the user-facing app on top of that is where projects and startups can monetize the underlying protocol. Do you think that's right?
It seems to be the trend. And, you know, I think, the kind of macro environment has changed. The crypto environment has changed. And there needs to be a lot more an urgent focus on sustainability for teams in the crypto space. And so, I think the model that you just described is one that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see how that develops, but yeah, I'm all for crypto becoming more sustainable. Like we can't be depending on token prices going up forever. So, and then to wrap up, so what's next for Matcha and ZeroX? Like, what are some of the development announcements, like big milestones that you're working towards?
Good question. So I think one of the things that we're constantly doing behind the scenes that maybe, there's a little bit less of, noise made about. It's not like a new feature or a big and new announcement, but you know, the DEX space is constantly evolving and expanding. New innovative DEX solutions are arriving, new blockchains. And so we are constantly, you know, fighting to have the latest liquidity sources supported in Matcha so that, again, it doesn't matter what you're looking to trade or where you're looking to trade it, you're going to get the best price on Matcha. And that requires a really massive investment, continuous investment of time and effort to support all these liquidity sources and ensure that they're actually improving pricing for users. So that's something that we're always working on. And, you know, with our recent launch of cross-chain swaps, super exciting. We're really interested to see how users interact with the product when it is, you know, multi-chain at its core. And so I think what we're going to be doing is we're going to continue to be learning about how users are interacting with cross-chain swaps and refining the experience for them. We just launched trade history, which was one of, I think it was the number one most requested feature from users. And, you know, cross-chain swaps were second on the list. And so we're going to continue to, you know, listen to user feedback and make sure that we're, you know, working on the things that are most important to them. So yeah, I guess on that note, if you're a user out there and you try out Matcha, there's something that we could do to improve it, please let us know. We value your feedback and it could very well end up shaping the product.
Nice. Awesome, Will. Thank you so much for taking the time. This was such a fun interview. And yeah, really excited for, you know, trying out this cross-chain swap solution and also for the like multi-chain billion tokens and assets on blockchains, this future that you're painting as well. So yeah, thanks again for joining me.
Thank you, Camila. Appreciate it.